Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. President Obama, speaking earlier this week before a friendly crowd in Las Vegas, outlined his plans for immigration reform. He said the time has come to fix what he called a broken system.
I'm here because business leaders, faith leaders, labor leaders, law enforcement, and leaders from both parties are coming together to say now is the time to find a better way to welcome the striving, hopeful immigrants who still see America as the land of opportunity.
Also this week, a bipartisan group of eight U.S. senators, four Democrats and four Republicans, unveiled a proposal for immigration reform as well. Joining us now to talk about the Washington politics of it all is Columbus Dispatch Washington Bureau correspondent Jessica Wehrman. Welcome back, Jessica.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So we have the so-called Gang of Eight senators, Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat John McCain, a Republican from Arizona, Dick Durbin, Democrat from Illinois, Lindsey Graham, Republican from South Carolina, Marco Rubio, Republican from Florida, and Mike Bennett, Democrat Colorado, and Jeff Flake, Republican Arizona. They're all over the map, for one thing. It looks like a pretty solid coalition when you look at the geography of it, but how much sway do they really have in Congress?
Oh, boy, that's kind of tough to predict at this point. I mean, I think the devil is in the details. You'll remember that these senators, basically what they introduced was an outline, and it was not dissimilar to what President Obama talked about one day later. There are concepts that actually you see in a lot of these immigration reform proposals. Many of them were in the 2007 proposal that President Bush had pushed. But I guess it's kind of soon to see. I mean, our own senators, Senator Brown sort of talked a little bit about, sort of general agreement with the concept and the idea. Senator Portman's been a little bit more mum. So I guess it's going to be, we're going to have to see legislative language before we know what happens. And the other question mark is the House. House Speaker John Boehner last week talked about in a private luncheon, talked about that it was time for immigration reform. But he didn't really endorse explicitly the proposal that was released this week. So that's the other sort of question mark.
The proposal is only in outline form at this time. No legislative language was released with it, but Senator Patrick Leahy, a Vermont Democrat and chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he scheduled the chamber's first hearing on immigration for February 13th, the day after the president's State of the Union address. Is language expected by the time they begin hearings?
That's also a question mark in our heads. I think what you can expect is probably it will be crafted afterwards. Now, the question is also, will it happen within the next 6 months? President Obama yesterday in interviews with Telemundo and Univision said that he thought March was a sensible timeline. So we'll see how quickly this becomes legislative language. We'll see what the big sticking points will be. I think one of the key differences between what President Obama talked about and what the Gang of Eight talked about was the border, and was the degree to which the border has to be secure before they can let folks who are undocumented immigrants obtain this path to legal citizenship.
I was curious about how they measure something like that. What do they mean by securing the border, and how do you define that?
I feel like that's going to be the hang-up, because how do you define? How do you know that it's completely secure? Now, the Senate plan requires a commission to determine if the border is truly secure. Again, we haven't seen legislative language on this. It's a really, I mean, how do you decide that? I mean, when we talk about, in January earlier this month, the Migration Policy Institute put out a report that said that the U.S. spends more on immigration enforcement than on the FBI, the DEA, the Secret Service, and all federal law enforcement agencies combined. Over the last 26 years, $187 billion has been spent on federal immigration enforcement. I've been here a while. I'm not going to say how long, because I don't want the radio to know how old I am. But I will say that ever since I've come here, periodically there's discussion and hearings and a lot of chest beating over how secure the border is. I'll also say that this is one thing that President Obama has actually beefed up quite a bit. I know know that the Obama administration deported nearly 410,000 people in 2012, which is a record, and it's 25% more than in 2007.
Yeah, definitely. In his address this week, he noted what his administration has done to strengthen security at the borders and more law enforcement focused on criminals who are here illegally, with deportations at their highest level. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Jessica Wehrman of the Columbus Dispatch Washington Bureau about proposals for immigration reform in the United States. Has the time come? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joining us now is Rob Cohen. He's an immigration attorney in Central Ohio. He's also chair of the board of the American Immigration Council. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thank you.
What about the border control? How do you measure or define something like that? What are we talking about?
Well, that's really the critical question, because the Gang of Eight, as they're now called, indicated that the 11 million undocumented will be able to become permanent residents as soon as we are in control of the border. And we haven't defined what those metrics are. The American Immigration Lawyers Association put out a report yesterday entitled Border Security: Moving Beyond Past Benchmarks. And one of the things that they looked at is what we've said are the benchmarks in the past. And each time we've set those benchmarks, we've now met them. For example, in 2011, we had 21,500 border agents, which was double the number of border agents we had only 5 years earlier in 2006. The number of apprehensions on the border has dropped to the lowest level in 12 or 13 years in 2012. So we've met the requirements that we've been talking about in the past. If the requirement is that we have to get to absolute zero crossings at the border, I don't think we'll ever reach that. I don't think there's a border in the world, and probably one of the most secure is between North Korea and China, where there are no crossings whatsoever. There will always be some crossings. And so we have to reach a balance between what we're willing to pay for, because, as Jessica indicated, we're spending more now than we ever have before, and there's budgetary considerations.
Jessica Wehrman, it's a bipartisan group, the Gang of Eight, but there is still ample opposition. In what corners is that most prevalent in Washington?
This is always sort of an issue that divides. On the Democratic side, you had labor unions in the past who had traditionally been worried about the implications of letting lower-paid workers come into the United States. Now, they've not really been very outspoken against this proposal, and in fact, the business community and some in labor are supportive of what they've heard so far. On the Republican end of the spectrum, there is concern about the A word, amnesty. Are we letting people who came here illegally stay? And what does that mean for the concepts of fair play, for the people who are waiting and trying to get in this country by playing by the rules? So that kind of divides the Republican end of the spectrum. I mean, if you're looking at Republican talk show hosts or conservative talk show hosts, you'll see the Wall Street Journal has been in general fairly supportive. There have been some radio talk show hosts on the other end who have said, no, this is not a great idea. I know Rush Limbaugh was kind of critical of the concept. So that's actually, I think, been the hang-up in the past on this. In 2007, President Bush pushed for this, but in the end, it was too divisive to pass.
Senator Jeff Flake, he's a Republican from Arizona, one of the Gang of Eight, in an interview with NPR's Steve Inskeep, where he was asked whether the proposed change would be just another amnesty plan akin to what President Reagan put forth in 1986. Here's how he responded.
If you look back in 86, it was amnesty because if you could prove that you'd been here 5 years, you got a shortcut to a green card. You cut in line ahead of those who had been going through the legal orderly process. That won't be the case here. If you're going to get on a path to citizenship here, you have to get in line behind those who have gone through the process. And it's a long and arduous process as well, with fines and back taxes and requirements to learn English, not just for citizenship, but for permanent residency.
Okay, so Jessica, I'm not an expert in immigration, but I kind of get that it's different than 86. You have to get in line. It's not, you don't jump ahead. What are people concerned about?
there still is sort of the general concern that in the long run, that it's amnesty, that people are allowed to. I mean, you have to get in line, but are we rewarding people by allowing them legal citizenship when they came here illegally? So it's sort of a fair play concept. They'll wait in line. They have to pay fine, back taxes, that sort of thing. But you know, the question is it good to reward people who came here illegally by giving them legal residency? I think that's the biggest concern.
Some analysts have predicted that given the makeup of the House, it won't fare well there at all. I mean, that's where the real sticking point is going to be.
You know, I don't know. I mean, it's possible. I will say that the person who has been talking about this quite a bit and talking about sort of the electoral needs for Republicans is John McCain. You know, Mitt Romney lost among Hispanic voters. Exit polls, I think, said 71% of Hispanic voters went for Obama and 27% went for Mitt Romney. And so there is an electoral issue here as well.
Because they make up more and more of the electorate.
It's a huge demographic, and it's mm-hmm. a demographic that can't be avoided. So there is sort of a pragmatic concern, I think, among Republicans as well.
What about the Tea Party elements? Are they pragmatic as well or not?
Well, remember, one of the folks who is in this Gang of Eight is Marco Rubio, who is a senator from Florida and is a Tea Party hero. And he's been one of the ones who's talked the most about the commission, the most about the need that they, you know, folks stand in line before they receive any sort of legal citizenship. And he's the fact that he supports it, I think, may say something. Again, this hasn't hit the House yet. I know John Boehner has talked about that there is a group of Democrats and Republicans who are working on this on the House end. So that's kind of the wait and see part of this. There's a lot of wait and see, as you can tell with this.
Rob Cohen, as chair of the board of the American Immigration Council, what do you hear about efforts to lobby on behalf of this immigration proposal, such as it stands? We're not really sure exactly what it's going to say yet.
Well, they're still putting together the bill, and we haven't seen what the actual legislation is going to look like. We've only seen the outlines, but there does seem to be a groundswell of support, even from the more moderate Republicans, who learned in November that self-deportation was not a winning electoral strategy. And one of the things that I remember from reading some of the political commentary over the years is that once somebody has voted in a presidential election a couple of times for a particular party, they have a lifetime imprint, and they are more inclined to stay with that party for a lifetime. And I think the Republicans are learning that if they're going to lose 71% of the Hispanic vote for a generation or two, that they have a long-term problem. And so you have the fringe element, and I would put, say, Representative Steve King or Lamar Smith on that fringe, who are very any kind of a legalization program. Their policies are not a long-term strategy. And I think the John Boehners of the world and the Senator McCains and the Senator Rubios understand that if they're going to have a long-term future for the Republican Party, they're going to need to embrace this particular problem. They got to get by it.
Jessica Werman, thanks for joining us again. We always appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Jessica Werman, she's a reporter for the Columbus Dispatch Washington Bureau. We're going to continue our conversation about the immigration reform proposals. I'd like to hear what you have to think. Let's make sure you tell our screener if you're for or against immigration reform, first of all, and then share your ideas. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Wikipedia relies on humans to write all of those entries, you know. A whole lot of human men, as it turns out.
And so I understand how we got here. I understand why so many Wikipedia editors are male. But it's not good for the encyclopedia.
Ladies, Wikipedia is looking at you. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll have a chat with the boss of the Wikimedia Foundation next time on Marketplace from APN.
Marketplace tonight at 6 on 89.7 NPR News. And it's 24 degrees with some isolated snow showers this afternoon. Very windy, a high of 29. Scattered snow showers tonight and a low of 12 degrees. Support for 89.7 comes from the Midland Theater in Newark, presenting Darian Ford's The Cookbook, a tribute to Sam Cooke as part of Midland's Memories series. Saturday evening, February 16th at 7 p.m. Tickets and more information at MidlandTheater.org. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. President Obama earlier this week outlined his plans for immigration reform. And also this week, a little bit, maybe a day earlier, a bipartisan group of eight U.S. senators, four Democrats and four Republicans, unveiled their proposal for immigration reform. Joining us now is Ira Melman. He's National Media Director and spokesperson for the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Welcome to the show, Ira.
Thanks very much.
In general, Ira, it says Federation for American Immigration Reform, but do the types of reform that have been put forth, say, in 2007 and again this year, is that the sort of reform that you're talking about, or is it something different?
Not at all. And as you point out, reform, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder.
Exactly.
We can reform things and make them worse. The fact of the matter is our immigration policies exist to protect the interests of the American people, and we have consistently failed to enforce those laws in a way that really do look out for the vital interests of American citizens, namely jobs, tax dollars, all the things that Americans are most concerned about. President Obama and the so-called Gang of Eight look at immigration primarily from the perspective of the immigrants themselves, even the illegal immigrants, the people who broke our laws to be here. They also look at it from the perspective of business interests that want to be able to hire cheaper labor. What they ignore, though, is the profound impact that this is going to have on American workers and American taxpayers. It does affect the jobs of Americans in many, many sectors of the labor market. When you have lots of low-wage, low-income, illegal immigrants coming here, bringing families, they are necessarily dependent on a lot of government services. When you're earning $25,000, $30,000 a year, even if you are paying taxes, it doesn't cover the cost of educating children, of providing health care to families. The American taxpayer is then stuck with the bill. The employer gets a low-wage worker. Everybody else gets stuck with the bills for all the social costs that come along with it. Granting amnesty isn't going to change that.
Well, there's a question about whether they're actually granting amnesty. But before we move on to that, I wanted to ask you, what do you mean then by for American immigration reform? What reforms would you be for?
Well, what we want, you know, the president did mention the fact that we need an employment verification system here in the country so that we can cut off that magnet of jobs. That is the single biggest draw that brings people to the country illegally. But, you know, what the president neglected to mention is that there already is such a system. It's called E-Verify. There is no reason why we can't make that universal, why every person who comes and applies for a job in this country should not go through the process, just as everybody who makes a purchase with their credit card goes through an electronic check and verify. It exists. The president is holding it hostage to amnesty for illegal immigrants because he believes that's in his political interest. Also, in terms of legal immigration, we have to get away from family chain migration policies. Right now, somebody who comes to the United States not only gets to bring a spouse and minor children, they get to bring a whole range of extended family members, including adult siblings who come with their spouses, who then have to be reunited with their families. All these people come irrespective of their own personal qualifications. It doesn't matter what their job skills are. It doesn't matter what their education levels are. It makes absolutely no sense. We need a policy that allows us to select people based on some objective assessment of their likelihood to succeed in this country.
Joining us now is Joe Moss. He's an attorney and chair of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. Joe Moss, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me.
What about the idea of employment verification and automatic verification? It is the computer age, after all.
And clearly that is going to be part of any agreement that the legislative branch can put together. And it's part of what's been offered both by the eight senators, I don't want to call them the Gang of Eight, but the eight senators, as well as the president. Not only that, but some elements of border security as well, which I think that would be something that the constituency affair might be happy with. What I think that they're unhappy with is the fact that we're going to have 11, 12 million people that now will have a path to stay in this country.
Ira Melman, your organization notes that Americans so forcefully opposed that bill in 2007, so forcefully opposed it that their calls to the Senate in that June of that year shut down the Capitol switchboard. It has nothing changed in the electorate in 5 years. Do you think that the opposition will be what it was in 2007? What are your predictions?
Yes, things have changed. What has changed is back then we had an unemployment rate of under 5%. Today we have an unemployment rate around 8%, but everybody knows it's really much higher than that. That, you know, we probably have 20 to 22 million people who are either out of work or underemployed in this country. Back then there was at least a pretense that after amnesty there would be some kind of enforcement. President Obama has already told us he is not interested in doing enforcement except in cases when an illegal immigrant goes on to commit some violent felony here in this country. So even if we were to go through this amnesty process, we would still wind up with the same situation in a matter of a few years because the president has already told us, I'm not going to do enforcement and nobody can make me do it. So, you know, things have changed, but the American public's opinion about this, I don't think substantially has. The polling questions that have been asked don't give people viable alternatives, such as let's enforce our laws in a way that convince people there's no reason to be here. We have seen that illegal immigrants, when you dry up that supply of jobs, the flow actually reverses. We've seen it just in recent years.
As far as enforcement goes, from what I understand, deportations are at their highest level, that enforcement has been a critical part of the at least the last 4 years. It's the highest that it's been in 12 or 15 years.
Well, you know, first of all, this administration is counting people that they catch near the border and putting back across the border as deportations. Those have never been counted before. Yes, I mean, the president is doing a reasonably good job removing criminal aliens. But, you know, we cannot limit enforcement of immigration laws strictly to criminal aliens. There is no law enforcement agency in the world that says we're only going after murderers, rapists, and armed robbers, and everybody commits other violations of the law is going to get away. And that's essentially what this administration has said. If you come to the United States illegally, if you don't commit any serious crime, you are here to stay. And believe me, people around the world are hearing that message.
But that's under the terms of this bill, which has yet to be drafted. In other words, what Mr. Melman is saying is that he's classifying as non-enforcement a term of a bill that is not going to consider it to be an element that would lead to deportation. So that's not non-enforcement. That would be enforcement of this new bill once that it's drafted. The enforcement of the existing laws is something, as he himself has admitted, that this current administration has gone after with a significant degree of energy, by the way. As I can see it on the street because I'm a practicing attorney.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you want to join the conversation, we're talking about immigration reform. Are you for or against it? Why or why not? Or if maybe your method of reform is different than what has been put forth over the past few days by the president and the Gang of Eight in the U.S. Senate, let us know that too. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Steve in Cleveland, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you, Ann. My point is, you know, the immigration system really is not broken, as a lot of people claim. The problem is, and I would agree with Mr. Melman, the problem is that the Obama administration, and go back to the Bush administration, they both failed to enforce the existing immigration laws, and that is exactly why we've got the problem we have now. There was the amnesty, general amnesty in 1986 that was supposed to bring an end to all illegal immigration, and it was supposed to be enforcement. Well, they never did the enforcement part, and the talk now about border security is only really half of the equation. The other half of the equation that no one's talking about is interior enforcement, which the Obama administration is currently not doing and encourages more illegal immigration.
What do you mean by interior enforcement?
Well, interior enforcement, I mean that when someone enters the U.S. either legally with a tourist visa and they overstay their visa, they don't leave. And there's very little chance of the Immigration Customs Enforcement coming after them, especially since there are no current mechanisms that that track if the people who received visas ever leave the country.
Okay.
And that's approximately 40% of the people, or 40 or 50% of the people, I think, that are in the country illegally. So although the Border Patrol may catch people who are illegally crossing the border, they, most statistics say they're only catching maybe one out of three. One gets deported, removed perhaps mm-hmm. back into Mexico. They probably try again.
There's some recidivism there, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So my point is, you have to have interior enforcement yeah. because two-thirds of the people who are legally crossing the border are remaining in the U.S. and they have very little chance of being caught by. They're not being tracked down by okay. Immigration Customs Enforcement.
Rob Cohen, you're an immigration attorney. Some of these people are your clients, perhaps?
Well, I don't, because of the nature of my practice is more of a business immigration.
Okay.
But I would like to respond to the caller's suggestion that we don't have a dysfunctional system. I'd also like to respond in the same token to Mr. Melman's comments, because frankly, I was a little bit surprised at how much I agreed with some of what he said. The policy goals of our immigration law, I do believe, do include our economic self-interest. I believe that they also should reflect our values as an American people. And our values include a certain amount of compassion and family reunification and an understanding of what it is like to help those in need and refugees. And we have to balance those. And I don't think anybody is suggesting that those don't have to be balanced. But I think our economic self-interest is one of the critical reasons why we need this immigration reform. Where I disagree with Mr. Melman is I believe that we ought to base our policy on facts. And he cites a whole lot of non-facts as if they are true. One of the things that we want to talk about, we talk about the 1986 Act as sort of being an example of amnesty. And studies have been done recently as to where those individuals are that were legalized. There were 3 million legalized immigrants in the 86 Act. Today, those immigrants own homes and contribute to our economic well-being in a greater proportion than native-born Americans. They have become part of the American economic fabric. They have increased their ability to contribute. They are taxpayers. They're making an important contribution. Right now, we have 11 million undocumented immigrants, and the estimates are that 8 million of those are in the workforce, and the remainder are family members. They are, in fact, contributing to the economy now. They're participating. They're paying taxes. And we need to recognize that they are part of our society, and we have to fix that. Mr. Melman talked about family migration and how brothers and sisters can come in. This is where we are dysfunctional, because I'm looking right now at a report that the State Department published as of November 1st. And brothers and sisters of born in Mexico of U.S. citizens, there are now 750,000 people in line. 4,550 are permitted each year. That's a wait of 164 years.
So they're allowed, but in very small amounts.
In very small numbers. And when you talk about a wait that's 164 years, you realize that that's not really a line. This morning, I talked with the dysfunction goes all the way through. This morning, I talked with a client, an anesthesiologist, who's looking at a 15-year wait. So that's dysfunction, and that's why we have to fix it.
Ira Melman, not everybody who is an illegal immigrant, if you want to refer to it that way, or who is undocumented, however you want to call it, not all of them are taking from the economy. They are contributing too, right?
Well, you know, everybody contributes in some way, but the bottom line is that we have an unemployment rate in this country that is at historically high levels. Many of the jobs that are now filled by illegal immigrants could be filled by legal workers earning higher wages. About half of the illegal aliens working in the United States are working off the books, so there's no payroll taxes being deducted. You know, they may pay some incidental sales taxes along the way, but, you know, on an income of a family income of $30,000, how much sales tax can you pay when food and other vital things are not taxed? The bottom line is, if we opened up these jobs for American workers working on the books at higher wages, they would be contributing a lot more. I don't dispute the fact that illegal immigrants work hard, that they want to contribute, that they're wonderful people in many respects. The bottom line is, though, the immigration law exists to protect the interest of the American people. It's there to protect our jobs and to protect our tax dollars. And, you know, we have to recognize that and make choices here. Public policy is about making difficult choices, and that's what we need to do.
614-292-8513 is the number to call if you would like to join this conversation. We've talked about the 1986 amnesty bill. Congress granted amnesty to 3 million immigrants who were here illegally. They promised enforcement of the laws. The enforcement that they promised apparently never came. We have an email from Amber. She says, how much will comprehensive immigration reform cost? Robert Rector of the Heritage Foundation estimated that the 2007 amnesty would have cost $2.6 trillion. The Senate and White House proposals look eerily similar to the 2007 amnesty. And even if Rector is off by 50%, we are talking about a scandalously high price. I think that the issue is not whether it's amnesty or not, but the enforcement, the cost of enforcement already is extreme. Ira Melman, any ideas about how the United States can achieve the goals that you've set forth in any kind of economical way?
Absolutely, by inducing voluntary compliance. That's the way we enforce most civil laws in this country. Most Americans file honest tax returns, not because they love forking over money to the government, but because they understand that there's enough scrutiny going on and that the penalties for not obeying are high enough. We could eliminate a lot of the jobs available to illegal immigrants in this country through universal implementation of E-Verify, which already exists. You give the employers the means to do it, and then you hold them accountable, and then you make examples of the ones who don't obey the law. And that will send a message to everybody else. And what we saw when President Bush was rebuffed in 2007, what happened was he then went out and said, I'll show you I can actually do enforcement. And for the last 18 months of his administration, he did it. And for the first time in anybody's memory, the number of illegal immigrants living in the United States actually declined. Then we had the recession, which further dried up the supply of jobs. And the illegal aliens left in even greater numbers. And so the numbers actually declined for a couple of years. And it proves that if the jobs aren't there, illegal immigrants will respond rationally. And it doesn't matter to them whether the jobs dry up because the economy is tanked or because the government is enforcing laws against the employers. If you eliminate the magnets, over time you will see the number of people living here illegally diminish. It won't happen overnight. They didn't all come yesterday. They're not all going home tomorrow. Some will never go home. But the choices aren't between mass amnesty, which is essentially capitulation, and mass deportations, which nobody is suggesting is reasonable.
What about the inefficiencies that Rob Cohen mentioned earlier? He mentioned a client of his. He's a specialist in medicine. He's been waiting. He's got many, many months or years ahead of him to wait for citizenship. What about those kinds of inefficiencies? This isn't somebody who's going to take a job away from somebody else.
Right. I agree that we have a really stupid immigration policy. We don't select people based on any objective assessment of how they are likely to contribute to this country. And I think we're on the same page here. Let's eliminate the policy that doesn't work. We have a policy. I think everybody acknowledges that our legal immigration policy doesn't make much sense. Let's scrap it. Let's come up with a policy that says we are going to look at people, decide who best fits the needs of our economy at any given point in time. And we have to remember it has to be flexible because the needs of the country in 2013 may be very different from the needs of the country in 2023. But we ought to be looking at what is somebody likely to contribute once they're here, not just who they happen to be related to. And you know what? When people break up their families by immigrating, they are making a choice. When somebody leaves the rest of the family behind and comes to the United States, they have made a choice. that we don't have to have a public policy thing, a public policy that reunites families that somebody has voluntarily broken up themselves.
Ira Melman, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Ira Melman, he's the National Media Director and spokesman for the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Coming up, we'll get to some of those phone calls and continue our conversation. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The political thriller House of Cards is a new series produced by and available only on Netflix. It premieres Friday. On the next Fresh Air, we hear from executive producer David Fincher and actor Kevin Spacey, who plays a scheming politician.
It feels like I'm in a 26-hour championship chess match because it's all about the moves.
Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And support our station at the $85 level or more and receive the WOSU member card. It's good for discounts at more than 200 member card partners. Visit WOSU.org/member card for more information. Be sure to join us for All Sides with Ann Fisher Friday and try to untangle some of the secrets of the human genetic code. And then 89.7 NPR News host Marilyn Smith has a conversation about the best food and restaurants in Central Ohio for All Sides Weekend. That's tomorrow from 10 a.m. till noon. And it's 26 degrees with partly cloudy skies and brisk winds, a high of 29 today. Clouds tonight, a low of 12. Support comes from the Columbus Jazz Orchestra, performing with the Columbus Youth Jazz Orchestra in Ragtime, Blues, and Beyond, a short history of jazz, with saxophonist Tina Fuller and drummer Lewis Nash, showcasing over 100 years of jazz February 7th through the 10th at the Southern Theater. Details at jazzartsgroup.org. And support comes from the Midland Theater, presenting Arlo Guthrie's solo tribute to Woody Guthrie's 100th birthday, Tuesday evening, February 19th at 7:30 p.m. Many of Woody Guthrie's songs are about his experiences in the Dust Bowl era during the Great Depression. More information and tickets at MidlandTheater.org. All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. President Obama earlier this week outlined his plans for immigration reform. Also, the day before, a bipartisan group of 8 U.S. senators, 4 Democrats and 4 Republicans, unveiled a proposal for immigration reform as well. Still with us is Joe Mas. He's chair of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. Joe, once again, thanks for joining us today.
And thank you, Ann.
And also with us is Central Ohio immigration attorney Rob Cohen. He is also chair of the board of the American Immigration Council. Yeah, Joe.
Yeah, and I wanted to answer a little further the email
from Amber about the
listener.
Cost.
Amber, I'd really appreciate that question about the cost. But, you know, the thing that you have to balance out is not that if you were starting from scratch, what would be the cost of implementing this, of legalizing everybody? You have to also look at the existing cost as a consequence of the enforcement as it's being advanced today. We had an explosion in the number of agents that were hired and trained and are now in the field as a consequence of the tragedy of September 11, 2001. And as a consequence of that, then you have huge costs associated with enforcement. I think Rob Cohen mentioned that it is greater than the enforcement cost of the FBI and the EDA and
CIA.
A number of CIA, everybody combined. And I think that we've taken our eyes off the ball. But I wanted to also address another issue that keeps coming up, and I think it bears mentioning, that is the referring to the proposed guidelines, which is not a bill yet, as amnesty. I took a moment because I also was saying, well, what's wrong with amnesty? But I said, no, let me take a moment and take a look and see what amnesty is. According to Black's Law Dictionary, amnesty is a pardon extended by the government to a group or class of persons, usually for a political offense. And it is not, if further, a change in a law, I repeat, a change in a law which renders innocent actions which previously broke the law. In other words, passing a new bill changing the parameters or allowing people that are here that entered without inspection is not amnesty, particularly if you haven't paid back taxes, if you haven't paid a fine, and jump through whatever reasonable hoops the bill might contain.
And Rob Cohen, as far as the economics of it go, when you start at that $2.6 trillion mark, you're not talking, Amber's not bringing up the other side of the equation.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure where the $2.6 trillion comes from.
The Heritage Foundation, but be that as it may.
Okay. I would ask, what's the cost of not doing it? And the cost of not doing it is a continued escalation in the costs of enforcement that we agree is not very productive. We have workers who are here. Mr. Melman suggested that if we got rid of them, that would all of a sudden open up lots of jobs for U.S. workers. But I didn't see a lot of the unemployed auto workers from Cleveland moving to Alabama to work in the fields and pick peaches or oranges when Alabama started cracking down on immigration. And what happened was a lot of the crops started rotting in the fields, and the farmers started losing enormous sums of money. So I want to know, what is the cost? And frankly, I don't have the answer, but I would suspect that the cost of not doing immigration reform is very high.
Joe Moss, what do we know about, first of all, the makeup of the immigrant community in Central Ohio? And also what their reaction has been to these announcements this week.
The reaction has been overwhelmingly positive. Now, we do have some activists, many of them actually not immigrants themselves, but members of the Hispanic community, that have been critical over the more strict elements associated with this, particularly the curious inclusion of the use of drones on the border. I found that somewhat puzzling. So there has been, I would say, for lack of a better word, on the left, some degree of criticism over the proposals, both the presidents as well as the senators. But other than that, I can tell you, and I've had a chance to already talk to a number of clients, and they are relieved, they are grateful, and they're grateful not just to the senators and the president, but to the American people for considering this. They're aware that the polling is showing overwhelmingly positive response to this concept, and they feel, many of them have told me, as Americans for the first time.
How many people in Central Ohio might this affect? Do we have any idea about that within the context of how many immigrants are in Central Ohio and how many of them are here that would benefit from
exactly.
this?
Exactly. And Rob and I were talking about this before the show. Our estimate, which usually is not challenged, is that we have between 50 and 60,000 primarily Hispanic immigrants in Franklin County. And about 20,000 of those are either citizens or permanent legal residents. So we're talking 30,000 would probably be a conservative view. So I guess Rob's going to have a lot of work to do here if and when this bill passes.
Joe in Columbus, you're on the air. You oppose immigration reform as it's been put forth this week. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Actually, I'm 100% behind immigration reform, but I want one other piece added, that the employers who hire illegal immigrants are fined extremely stiffly, maybe $10,000 per person. Hmm. And the reason for this is because they are endangering the lives of these people. It wasn't too many years ago that we saw two roofing crews had two undocumented workers killed, and then the companies just disappeared and walked away from it. They are exploiting these people.
And actually, I'm aware of the cases that Joe is referring to.
Okay.
I think that there is going to be an effort, and Rob, maybe you agree with me. I think there's going to be a renewed effort with respect to the enforcement on the part of the employer as well. We just don't have the details yet to be able to see that. But the exploitation of the workers has been a classic problem.
Okay, Joe, thank you for your call. Wesley in Youngstown, you are a construction worker. You say it's hard to get jobs, and you oppose the proposal that's been put forth so far this week?
Correct. Yeah, I'm just, I did construction and landscaping. I lived in North Carolina, and it was just very difficult to get a job there. And then to top it off, we take our vacations. We're on Blue Ridge Parkway, and a landslide was there, and an NCDOT worker couldn't speak English to tell me how long we had to wait there to pass.
You mean a state worker?
Yeah, yeah. Those are hard jobs to get, and it's... I lived in California as well, and you go to Home Depot in the morning, there's 30, 40 guys standing there waiting for a job, and it's obvious it's tax-free, and it's kind of disappointing there.
Chumas?
Well, I was just wondering, would you feel better? This is, of course, to the caller. Would you feel better if those individuals paid the back taxes? Would you feel better if they were on a track to learn English and perhaps there were a requirement that they learn English before?
And there is that component.
And there is that component, of course, in the proposed guidelines.
Correct. Yeah, that would be great there. But there's people spilling across the border daily, and they go back over for the holidays, and it's just not a big deal to come back and forth. I would like to go to Canada, you know, and I can't do that personally and without the fear of getting sent home.
Okay. No, I think it can go.
Yeah, I beg to disagree.
I just came back.
If you have a passport, you're free to go. You're not free to work in Canada. And
that might be what he was talking about, though.
But there Canada has the same kinds of laws, and if you have the right kind of job, actually Canada is very welcoming. Country, and one of the arguments that I think we are desperate for reform is Canada is actually recruiting among many of our immigrant community because they see our immigrant community as an economic boost.
As far as these are the more higher educated,
these are the higher educated, because we make it so difficult for everybody across the spectrum. The higher educated as well as the lower skilled, Canada is a beneficiary of that. One of the things that I would respond to this caller is there is abuse in the system, and nobody is defending abusive employers. At least no organization that I'm affiliated with believes that abusive employers should be allowed to hire undocumented immigrants and pay them below subsistence wages. But one of the problems is that when you have such a high concentration of people who don't have choices, then it is easier. We're enabling the abusive employers. And at the same time, we're making it very difficult. I mean, we've talked about E-Verify, and E-Verify is an important tool that is going to become more pervasive, but it's got to be better, too, because I spend a lot of my time counseling employers on how to comply with E-Verify. It's not as simple as we might think. So we want to weed out the abusive employers and make it easier for those who are trying to do honest work.
Wesley, thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Brian in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Brian.
Yes, hello, Ann. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I appreciate this conversation. I wanted to ask about something that's missing in the national and the local conversation, I think, which is the structural drivers of immigration, the push factors. Why are people immigrating from Central and South America? You know, there's a lot of drug violence in Mexico. And what is our role in our own global neighborhood? We're talking a lot about constricting or enabling supply, whether it's supply of jobs, supply of legal residency, all of these things that are simply supply-side solutions. I don't hear a lot of talk about demand. Why are people moving here? What's pushing them, and how can we affect economic development and change in those areas to address the underlying factors?
It always is shocking that Mexico is just over a man-made border, and yet it suffers so much compared to how the United States operates economically. Joe Moss?
Yeah, and Brian, what a great question, and thank you so much for that. You know, I get a chance to go to Mexico at least once a year, and I'm always struck by how beautiful the country is and how beautiful the people are. So I ask myself the same question, but more importantly, I ask my clients, each and every one of them, as to why was it that you left? What was the situation? We had two waves of immigration from Mexico beginning in about 1995, and the first wave were residents of the state of Michoacán in Mexico. Originally, there was an economic downturn that prompted that, but then if the name sounds of the state sounds familiar, it's because now it has, or I should say since that time, become sort of the epicenter of the drug violence and the now kidnappings that you're seeing. The second wave were residents of the state of Oaxaca. The state of Oaxaca is probably one of the poorer states. It's in the southern part of Mexico, and it's an area that has been ignored by the Mexican government. Many of those folks speak Spanish as a second language. They speak an indigenous language. And they were coming to the United States for the reason that most immigrants do, to find a better life here. And they found a home in Columbus. So those are the general drivers. But
the larger question of what
Brian is 100% correct. If the economic conditions were improved there, then they would love to stay, I'm sure, near friends and family and in a beautiful country with great weather.
Well, one of the things
we're chuckling at the weather thing.
One of the things that I think we have to be careful of is that immigrants. I tell my children all the time, immigrants are just like people, and there's no single narrative. And although there are large demographic groups that become important and create certain stereotypes, I've been doing this for a long time, and what I've learned is that every time I think I understand what is a motivating factor for a particular individual, I learn that people are very complex, and there's no single narrative to the immigrant story.
Brian, thanks a lot for your call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care. Real quick, Brian, Brian from Upper Arlington this time. Brian, we're running out of time. I wanted to squeeze you in, though. Welcome to the show.
Well, I appreciate that, Anna. I have noticed how we've evolved here, or de-evolved, I guess, the employment side, and it's very interesting that we've been here before. And as we built up to World War II, America obviously introduced what was called the Bracero Program, and that's something that wasn't touched on, where we invited waves of Mexicans to come over and help us with our labor shortage. But then in the 50s, we had what was called Operation Wetback, put on by the U.S. Attorney General.
It was actually called that?
Yes.
It was actually called that, and it was in response to, during the 50s, the early 50s, between 53 and 54, the unemployment crisis. So we've been here before. This is not a new argument, and I'll go ahead and take my comments off the air.
Joe
Can
Moss?
I have a feeling may also want to contribute to this, but the Operation Wetback, in fact, and it's history books don't usually address this, in fact, caused the deportation not only of individuals that had crossed the border, but also of American-born children, many of whom now are folks close to my age, and I've met a number of them. That have returned to the United States because, of course, they were United States citizens. So that is not necessarily a shining chapter in American history. But
when
the
it
caller,
suits us.
Brian, number two, is absolutely correct. And that is that was a sad chapter on both ends, I believe.
Real quickly, the New York Times ran a story several months ago about the number of American children who have been deported with their undocumented parents and who are now growing up in schools that cannot, in Mexico, who cannot educate them and who cannot handle them. And what is the long-term impact when they come back in 20 and 30 years and they don't have the education? So,
Rob Cohen, lots of things to talk about. I'm sure the conversation will continue as we go forward with immigration reform or not in the United States. Joe Moss, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Great
Joe Moss is an attorney and chair of the Ohio Hispanic Coalition, and Rob Cohen as well, immigration attorney, chair of the board of the American Immigration Council. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Corinne Gleckler, and our production assistants Karim Chaban, Rose Joe, and Leticia Wiggins. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is 89.7 NPR News and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News. Your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU.